can't be Denver County. Last time we played Denver, they scored 7 times.
Haven't you guys ever seen these movies? We're just supposed to rally together, believe in ourselves, and we win in the end.
In the movies, they always go out and find a kid who's really good to join the team.
Hey, that's right. We need a ringer.
We need a Canadian.
Unapologetically Canadian, you're listening to The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
I ignored you for a long, long time, but then you had the best opening line. You're lying next to me, I don't know where to hide. I see a smiley face that makes me wanna cry. What was I thinking? 'Cause all we did was fly. Don't you ever dare to wear my Johnny Cash t-shirt.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. Glad to have you with us tonight, everybody, as we get set for another busy show. Lots to go over in the hockey world. With us, as always, back from parts unknown, known as Edmonton, Jenna, who's here permanently now, from what we understand. So welcome back, Jenna.
Thank you. Yeah, I am. You're stuck with me now. So thanks that for having me. Yeah.
That is you say that like that's negative, but that's good news, I would say. So
perfect. Well, glad to hear it then.
Looking forward to a lot of stuff this week. A lot to go over in terms of different things. We'll start with the Olympics because we're just 3 weeks away, which is weird to say, but we're 3 weeks away from the Olympics.
That's insane.
Yeah, it does not feel like we're 3 weeks. Usually there's more of a buildup, I find, but
yeah,
there's not a buildup this year because, like, it's the whole COVID and people got other stuff going on and all that kind of stuff. But as it is, interesting bit of news coming out of Beijing this week in that it sounds like there might be some problems with some athletes that go to Beijing in that they may end up being positive for COVID despite not having COVID or being at least asymptomatic for COVID. China's COVID testing policy uses a higher threshold for detecting positive cases, making it more challenging for athletes, especially those who have recently recovered from the virus, to produce a negative test upon arriving in China.
Yeah, yikes. I mean, that's obviously, I'm not saying, I don't know, I think it's a good thing. I mean, trying to be as safe as possible. However, what are they going to do? Because I know, where was it? You were saying, and I think I read that Canada does, their threshold's what, like 35?
So yeah, so Canada for its threshold value coming in, if you're going to come in terms of flying into Canada or whatever, their threshold value is 35. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the lower the number means that basically there's less of a chance that you're asymptomatic or anything like that or whatever. The higher the number means that you still have some sort of remnant of COVID in your system.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that's probably going to cause a few problems.
There are a number of players that legitimately we'll talk about in a second, but to give you an idea, the NBA and the NHL use 30 as their value, which is why we see less cases popping up weekly with the NBA and the NHL compared to, say, the NFL, which also uses 35 like Canada does. So typically, according to an infectious disease specialist, CT numbers of 30 or greater, we start to think of people as less infectious, but it's not perfect. Like, it's not perfect at all. China is saying at 40, you're still a chance to be positive. So looking at how tightly they've got this locked down, we already know the KHL just resumed play today in terms of them coming back and full schedule and get everybody going after taking a week off after discovering a ton of cases over in Russia, a ton of cases in the KHL of COVID-19. How many of those guys now might be affected by this?
No kidding. Hey, I didn't even really think about that. Just, I mean, we knew that, but I think there's going to be, like I said earlier, some problems, not only with them, like clearly, yes, a lot of the problems are going to come from them because, I mean, if they're all testing positive already, they're still going to be testing positive without having, if you know what I mean?
Well, and that's the thing. Like, there's a 3-week break in there, right? And that's where everybody's gonna go, oh, don't worry, we're gonna be fine. Like, you know, you'll recover in a few days. You know, you'll be back to normal. You may still have some, you know, some antibodies in your system, but you should be okay. Here's the thing, though, is that people who are testing positive in China may not have tested positive when they left because of the lower thresholds in different countries. For example, if you leave Canada and Canada's 35 is the threshold, and you get on an airplane, you could get off in China and be positive and miss the entire event.
Yeah. I mean, obviously a little bit scary. I'm super curious to see how it turns out because I just have a bad feeling. I mean, I've had a bad feeling about it all along just because throwing that many athletes from all over the world into one, basically one little space, but.
We know what the NHL threshold is. We know what the NBA threshold is. You know what the KHL threshold is? Well, they don't have one because, again, they weren't testing for anybody. They weren't doing any testing.
Yeah.
So we're talking about now, if guys are going to get it over the next, say, week or two and go, oh, I'll be okay. Don't worry. I'll be okay in time for the Olympics. Chances are you won't be.
Yeah. I mean, unless they do, I know I've heard like from other places, if you have COVID and you need to like travel somewhere or something, you can just get a note from a doctor and say like, oh, I just had COVID. But even then, how do you know? I don't know.
But that's the thing, though. So the threshold is basically saying to China whether or not you're going to be, whether you have a chance of being a positive COVID carrier. And that's the thing, is that even if you're asymptomatic and you test at 40, they're still going, no, you can't come into the country. Like, you're done. You can't participate. You're going to have to quarantine now. There are going to be athletes. And we know that like the women's team and Brad Gushue, for example, in terms of curling, him and his team have rented a huge house out in Vancouver. And they're basically staying there for like 3 weeks before the Olympics start so that they have no contact with anybody because they want to go over and they want to play. And I get that. Same thing with the women's team. Women's team has been isolating. They're making sure that they're not near anybody. They're not having any sort of outside contact come in. They're doing the right things. Again, men's hockey is legitimately pulling a pile of players. We're not just talking Canada now. We're talking the U.S., we're talking Russia, we're talking all sorts of teams, Slovaks, Czechs, the whole lot of them. There are a pile of them coming over from the KHL. And you just wonder how many of these teams are just going to show up with like 23, 24 guys and all of a sudden be down to a roster of 18 or 19.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like that's going to cause a lot of problems. I'm just curious to see how it turns out because I don't foresee it going well.
I don't see it going really well for anybody. Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I mean,
I want to say that I'm positive of, not that I'm positive about COVID. I want to say that I'm positive that there are going to be surprises at this Olympics. I just don't think they're going to be good surprises.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think there's going to be a lot of surprises that are, yeah, like you said, definitely not good ones. And I think we're going to see more than we're expecting to see as well. So
let's hope, knock on wood, that it doesn't affect too many people. I know that, again, there's some argument and some people that are going, this isn't right. We need to get this fixed. We need to have this changed in terms of the setup that we're going to be under, in terms of all the, but they're going to be testing people daily. And that's the thing. So to give you an example, figure skating duo Vanessa James and Eric Radford tested positive over Christmas. A number of Canada's long track speed skaters have recently recovered from the virus as well. Are they going to be allowed into the country?
Yeah, hey.
And you go, okay, well, maybe they will be. Like, there's nobody. So according to the rules, any games participant, should they recover from COVID-19 30 days or less before departure, have to produce 3 negative PCR tests in order to even be allowed to the Olympics. Like, in order to even show up for testing, they have to be basically 3 negative tests in a row.
Yeah.
They're submitted to the Beijing Olympic Committee. Should the participant be approved, there will be 2 more pre-departure tests, 96 and 72 hours before the flight to Beijing. So there's 5 tests you have to do in 30 days to prove that you're negative just to land in China.
Yeah, that's...
And then when you get to China...
If it's...
But then you get to China and there's a PCR test there as well with the higher threshold now.
Yeah. The odds are okay, I guess, if you've done that many tests already. But like you said, that higher threshold can make...
But we're not done testing, though, because if you do test positive and you're asymptomatic, like you have all the required documentation that says you did all the tests and you're okay and nobody, but you still come out positive there. So you exceed that threshold of 40. You're held in isolation in a hotel nearby. And then two more negative tests are required to be released into the closed loop system as part of the Olympics, where they test daily. Like, you're like the Olympics is basically just going to be the Olympics of COVID testing. That's all it's going to be.
Yeah, 100%. That's crazy. It's going to be like, who can get the most COVID tests? Whoever does wins.
I mean, this is crazy. Good on the IOC and for China for being uber careful about this. I have no problem with them basically saying, like, let's make sure this doesn't happen.
100%. I agree, but...
But Canada's first flight to get staff and athletes into Beijing happens on January 26th.
Okay.
So, basically Canada's going, we're going to get over there early. So there's no hiccups along the way.
Yeah, that's definitely smart. I mean, even then it just doesn't seem like much time at this point. I feel like they should just head out there right now.
Well, I mean, you think that might be the right thing to do. Again, for those that are wondering, the 2022 Winter Olympics, the opening ceremony is on February 4th. So mark your calendars if you're going to watch that, but just remember that women's hockey is played basically every day at 10 o'clock. So,
yeah, right.
If you're going to catch Team Canada, 10 o'clock is where you want to adjust your days accordingly. So you stay up a little bit later and
maybe
sleep in a little bit more. But that's the setup in terms of women's hockey. Men's hockey is kind of all over the place, but that'll be the setup for that. But I'm just worried that, again, I'm not worried about the athletes so much, you know, testing positive. I'm just worried of the fact that, you know, somebody's going to get there and they're going to have their entire Olympic experience ruined before they even step onto the field of play. And that's going to suck if that happens.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's obviously good for them for, you know, taking charge and saying, no, this is what's going to happen. But at the same time, like you said, I think we're going to have some surprises and a lot of people are going to have some issues when they get there. Like you said, that's very sad. They've been training for what, 4 years now to get there. And
yeah,
but hopefully there's not as many as I'm thinking there's gonna be. But
if you need somebody on social media to follow all this stuff, Devin Haru, who is an outstanding CBC reporter, he has been tracking all of this stuff fairly closely. He's actually over in Beijing already, so he's doing a ton of work in terms of making sure that, you know, people are aware of what's going on. At Devin_Herou, Herroux, Devin Haru. If you're looking for him on social media, follow him. He's got a handle on all this Olympic stuff so far. So he's the guy that I follow for all my Olympic news. So he does great work with curling too. So not that he's a hockey guy, but his curling coverage is rather phenomenal. So,
well, I haven't even heard of that. So I'll definitely have to check him out.
Devin's a good guy. He's a good guy. He was in Tokyo, and you might get a kick out of this. This is totally off topic now, but he legitimately had people following him around, like Japanese people following him around, because he would do a daily walk where he would go and buy coffee from a different place and then rate it online.
Really?
And like he said, like, there were people that would follow him from his hotel just to see where he was going to go that day and what coffee he was going to get.
That's so funny. Can you imagine?
Oh, I think that's pretty cool. I mean, if Devin has that kind of following again in China, good for him that he's this, you know, this random Canadian dude showing up and raiding coffee, and all of a sudden he's got fans all over the world. So
no kidding, hey.
So good on him. Good on Devin for that. But again, if you need a good guy to follow, he's got a, you know, thumb on the pulse here for all of that kind of stuff. So good to see Devin doing that. Another kind of weird story, and I know we were talking about this part of the show, but news broke last Friday, although very quietly. Not wasn't a lot of chatter about this, although I picked it up a little bit on Monday as well. Vegas Golden Knights, we all know, pretty good team. They seem to have a fairly solid roster and certainly know how to win. Vegas, according to their owner, Bill Foley, on Friday told Vegas Hockey Hotline on Sinbin Vegas, hosted by Brian Blessing, that the Golden Knights will get a new uniform next year.
Again.
Again. And that's the key. Again. He said, so, and again, they asked, like, they, the two hosts that were on there, Blessing and his co-host, I missed his name, but I'll see if I can find it. They asked him, like, what does it look like? Like, what are we talking about here? Because you already have a gray one, you already have a gold one, you already have a white one. What does it look like? And Foley responded, quote, "I don't have one handy. We sent it back to have a couple of modifications. It's a good one. You're going to like it," unquote. He wouldn't spill the beans on what it looked like, but Bill Foley apparently thinks it's a good one. So I don't know what that means, but they're going to have another jersey next year.
I feel like it means that we're not going to like it as per usual.
Per usual. Yeah, there's probably going to be a lot of, what are you doing?
Yeah, sounds about right. But yeah, like you said, that was pretty quiet news. I didn't really hear much about it till you brought it up. So
right. So there was other news that he spilled the beans on in that interview as well. Oh. Now, Brian asked Bill Foley when the team will be switching to the gold uniform. In terms of, you know, them being called the Golden Knights, why aren't you wearing the gold uniform as your standard home uniform? Makes sense, right? Like, you're the Golden Knights. Why are you wearing gray at home, not gold?
Yeah.
And Foley responded, quote, "I believe gold is a better jersey. We're the Golden Knights." And then he followed that up by saying, "I wouldn't be surprised if you see us kind of matriculate to more gold next year than gray. And then gray becomes, well, wear it 10 times a year," unquote. So basically gray would get sort of thrown into the alternate universe. And gold would be your home uniform.
Oh, interesting.
Which means the Golden Knights would officially be gold.
Which, yeah, I think I like that.
You know what? I like the gray uniforms. Don't get me wrong. I think they look classy. The gold, I'm not really big on the metallic uniform gold that they wear.
Yeah.
But they're the Golden Knights. I actually don't have an argument with them justifying the switch to this uniform.
Right? I don't know. I don't hate the jerseys. Again, they're a little flashy, but like you said, they're the Golden Knights. So I feel like it's fitting.
So,
you can't really argue that.
Well, but here's where things get a little messy now. Because again, we just heard Foley mention that they're getting a new uniform, which means that they're pushing the gray into the alternate status, the gold at home, and the white on the road. Does Vegas really need a fourth uniform?
No.
And the red, I mean, the red seems to be retired. I was gonna
say we're missing one. Yeah.
Yeah. The red reverse retro that Reebok forced on everybody is basically mothballed at this point. So
yeah,
we'll get rid of that for a while. But does Vegas need a fourth jersey if they already have an alternate uniform?
I don't think that it's necessary. I mean, I guess we see lots of teams, they have lots of different jerseys, but I just don't see the point of it.
Well, see, I don't see the point of it either, but I look at this now and I go, you have a gold jersey, you have a white jersey, you have a gray jersey, which are your generic three colors of your color palette in terms of what they wear. You've mothballed the red now. The red is no longer part. What color is this uniform going to be?
Yeah.
Because if they come out with a black uniform, I'm burning Vegas to the ground.
Yeah, hey,
And likely because it's Bill Foley talking about it, and he's a big Army guy in terms of the university that Army wears black. So I can see that being a legitimate possibility.
Yeah, I'm trying to like picture something in black and it's not going for me.
I don't want to see that at all.
Yeah, don't picture it because it doesn't work.
I will just be angry if that's the case. But I don't know. I look at this and I go, this is ridiculous. This is, you've been around since 2017. Like again, they started playing in 2017, 2018. You've had five jerseys in 5 years of existence now.
Yeah.
Like what's with the suitcase full of laundry before you're even, you know, old enough to buy your own clothes? Like,
yeah, that is.
There's a lot.
Like they seem a lot newer, but yeah, that's a lot of jerseys.
Well, and I mean, I went through some of the other teams as well. And I mean, I'm not trying to make light of what Vegas did here, but Mighty Ducks of Anaheim introduced their fourth and fifth jerseys in their fifth year of play. And the reason behind that is because they had a deal. They signed a brand new deal with Nike and Nike wanted to get their own design out there. Okay, fine. I get it. Like Nike had a home and a road jersey. They had four jerseys in that 1 year of play. Yeah. San Jose, for example, introduced their fifth jersey 10 years into their existence. Dallas had five jerseys in 10 years after they relocated from Minnesota. And it took Tampa Bay 15 years to get five different jersey designs. Vegas has five and five. Like this is madness.
Imagine if they like keep doing one new one every year and they end up with like 30.
Well, by the time they hit their 10th anniversary, they're going to have more clothes than they know what to do with.
Yeah, no kidding, hey?
But I look at this and I go, if you're doing a five-year, and again, I'm thinking, and here's where we get way off topic here now, rabbit hole in the hole, you know, conspiracy idea for the jersey, is that they're the Vegas Golden Knights and they wear the V on their jersey already. And V is the fifth year anniversary. It'd be the year five in Roman numerals.
Okay.
That the V is going to play a prominent role in that jersey.
Interesting.
It's going to be a design, like a design of the V. I'm just saying that the V will, either it's going to be the logo or something along those lines, where that fifth year now takes on a significant meaning with the V in Vegas Golden Knights.
Yeah, I don't know. That I like that conspiracy.
Sit up at night thinking of these things.
Do we know like when they're gonna like come out with anything, or is it just more so?
Haven't announced anything yet. There's no information about when they're going to reveal it, but I would assume there's probably going to be a summer party again, because they throw a party for every single thing they do down there.
Wow, that's nice, hey?
it's Vegas, right? They're going to spend money if they want to, you know, they want people to notice. But there was some other chatter, and you can certainly comment on this, Jenna, because I think this is going to be something that you might want to go, are you kidding me?
Oh, great.
The segment that he was on, that Bill Foley was on, he commented that he doesn't like his own team wearing the shiny gold helmets. He does not like those helmets. Your thoughts on the shiny gold helmets?
I hate those helmets.
Okay, because he also pointed out that he felt even angrier when he saw the Los Angeles Kings wearing the shiny silver helmets.
Yeah, no, those are terrible. So, I mean, can't he just tell them to not wear them? Just say, not today, and hope for the best.
So here's a question then. Who is greenlighting this crap on people if it's not Bill Foley? Who's the person in charge that's going, you know what, that's a great idea, let's put the metallic gold on those guys?
I was just gonna say, like, who is in charge, because I would like to know.
So I need to know actually.
Yeah,
I want to know that as well. So he doesn't like the gold helmet, so it sounds like they're being mothballed as well. They're gonna be scrapped, which is probably a good idea.
Yeah.
They also talked about holding a potential Winter Classic or Stadium Series game in Las Vegas.
Oh, wait, winter?
Well, now you're going to say that doesn't make any sense. Now, I will say this. Dallas had the outdoor game, had the Winter Classic in 2020.
Okay, but
Dallas didn't have any snow. They put artificial snow down all around the rink, basically.
Yeah, I feel like I remember that, but
Dallas and Nashville played that game. But Vegas has had an outdoor game before.
Really?
1993, the Los Angeles Kings with Wayne Gretzky played the New York Rangers with Mark Messier.
Oh.
They did it in the parking lot of like Caesar's Palace or something.
Interesting.
Now, the game wasn't that great, and it was like a preseason game, but they did it. And now with all the new technology and all that kind of stuff, there's a chance that legitimately they could probably do it again. So if there's a potential Winter Classic or Stadium Series game, how much madness would that be down in Vegas? Like, people would flock to that in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah. That would be insane.
So I thought that was an interesting...
What year did you say they were trying to do that?
They haven't announced a year, but they want to... Okay. That he's interested in doing one. I'm not saying that the New Jersey has anything to do. There's no correlation between Winter Classic or Stadium Series and the New Jersey. There's none. There's zero. Don't attach those two in any way.
Yeah.
But the NHL also hasn't announced any 22-23 games yet for the outdoor games. So maybe this isn't some sort of ongoing discussion.
Yeah. Interesting.
But
that could be fun.
Vegas is getting all sorts of chatter on our show tonight, because that was an interesting, if you need to look that up, Vegas Hockey Hotline, Sinbin Vegas. It happened on Friday. I highly recommend it. It's about 30 minutes long, but Bill Foley spills the beans on a bunch of stuff. He talks about the Jack Eichel trade as well a little bit in there. Not that it's super important, but talks a little bit about how important it is to have a guy like Jack Eichel on his team and all that kind of stuff. So really good interview if you're going to go look that up. It is linked on Hockey Blog in Canada if you're going to go look for that as well. So really, really good in terms of some of the stuff that's on there. And Bill Foley, for an owner, to hear him sort of be as open and honest as he was on this podcast, on this recording that he did, I'm impressed. Don't get me wrong, I'm not big on ownership in the NHL level at any point, but the fact that Bill Foley comes out and tells everybody, this is what we're doing and we're going to do it, like, whether you like it or not, it's kind of cool. It's kind of neat to see the owner being upfront about everything that's going on with his franchise.
Yeah, I mean, we talk a lot about the transparency within the NHL, and there's not a whole lot of it. So, like, being open and honest, some major bonus points for him there.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that, for sure. You want to stay in the desert? We got some news from the desert. I would love to. Let's start in Tempe, Arizona, where, as of right now, as you're listening to the show, the Tempe City Council is meeting. Now, people are going to go, what do I care about that? Like, what does that matter to me? Tempe City Council is meeting tonight because there's going to be a vote that happens as they're meeting again about the arena and entertainment district the Coyotes have put forth. Again, this is a $1.7 billion proposed arena entertainment district. that the Coyotes want to build in Tempe, city council is basically going to vote on whether or not this is going to go ahead.
I'm very curious about this one, to be honest with you.
So as it stands right now, because they didn't come to an agreement at the last city council meeting, as it stands right now, rumor is that of the seven people that have voted or are going to vote on city council, three are voting yes, two are voting no, and two are still undecided, but leaning heavily towards no, thanks to the Coyotes' failure to pay bills and taxes this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's a fair reason to say no, but...
So you wonder, $1.7 billion is a lot of money. Where's that money coming from? According to the Coyotes, and this is the Arizona Coyotes talking, they said the deal is to be privately financed.
What?
How? Really? I have no idea where they're digging up $1.7 billion, but they must have money buried in the desert somewhere. Because
yeah, well, we should go find that money.
Why? How do you not pay your bills and your taxes all year and then come up with $1.7 billion for an arena and entertainment district?
Yeah. What the heck? Interesting.
So Tempe City Council was meeting at 5 p.m. Mountain Time, which would have been 6 p.m. Winnipeg time. So we'll probably know by the end of the evening whether or not Tempe is going to go ahead and allow the Coyotes to buy this land and start developing it. But I honestly don't. I'm going to be as kindly and as nicely as I can. They should be in Houston. We're talking about moving. This team was moving. This team was, you know, is going to have to find a new place to live, which we'll talk about in a second because Gila River Arena doesn't want them around anymore. Move them to Houston.
Yeah. There you go. But I mean, I'm still just stuck at the part where they're not paying their bills, but they have all this money. I don't get it. I don't understand. How does that happen?
I don't know. I don't know. That's all I can say. Yeah. I look at this repeatedly and I just go, I don't understand how you can't pay $1 million in taxes and bills to the arena, to the city of Glendale, and then turn around and go, yeah, we got $1.7 billion to spend. Let's go.
Yeah, I'm so confused, if I'm being honest with you.
I don't understand. I don't know. Baffled. That's all I can say. Baffled by this. Yeah, this breaking news out of Tempe anyway. So we'll see what happens tonight. I am entirely in favor of the two undecided voting no. I would like to see the Coyotes not get this deal. The Coyotes, though, have threatened that if they don't get the deal in Tempe, they're going to move to the First Nations Reserve next door, who have offered them basically the same area of land just on their side of the border, which means that Tempe would have to deal with all the problems of an arena district and an entertainment district and get none of the money back.
Yeah, hey.
So I don't know how this is going to work, and I don't know exactly what the Coyotes are doing, but it sounds like they're kind of holding everybody hostage with this threat. Yeah, while waving $1.7 billion around that they don't have.
Yeah. Like, it's just such a bizarre scenario.
This whole thing just reeks of being fraudulent and complete BS that I wish that the NHL would just go, all right, prove it. Prove that you got $1.7 billion in financing. Let's see what you got. Bring the books for it.
I don't know. Like, somebody's got to.
But that's the thing. So the Goldwater Institute, which is involved in this as well, has said that they want to see, they don't believe in the financing. They want to see where this money is coming from. And basically, the Coyotes have told the Goldwater Institute, we're willing to work with you if you vote for us, and we'll let you see where it's coming from.
Wait, you're joking. It sounds...
No. No, I'm not. Like, that's exactly what the argument is right now. They're not going to let you see the books if you're not going to vote for their arena thing, is basically what they're saying, which, again, is their right. They're a business. I get they don't have to do that. But the Goldwater Institute is going, well, we're not going to give you the land unless you can prove you can pay for it.
Yeah. I just, what in the heck is going on over there?
Like, I don't, the whole situation in the desert is just getting worse and worse when it comes to the Coyotes. But that's not even the top of the problems on the list that they have right now. Because, again, they don't have a home next year.
Yeah.
Like, they don't have a place to play next year.
Figure that one out real quick.
Right. Like, Gila River Arena wants nothing to do with them. Get out. Like, get all your stuff out of the offices by, like, June 30th. We're done.
That's crazy.
So, I don't know what the Coyotes are planning on doing. I don't know where they're going to go. I don't know where they're going to play next year. The Phoenix Suns have already told them, like, don't even ask. Like, bugger off.
Yeah. Wow. So they have nowhere. if they don't show where their money's coming from.
Right. And that's the thing, is that if they start building this district, they're not going to have it built in time for next season. So where are they playing next year? Because nobody seems to know.
I'm so curious about this whole, like, this one's just kind of confusing, but I just, what the heck?
So let's jump to the current home then, because speaking of Gila River Arena, this is where all this is sort of changing in rapid fashion, because the city of Glendale has basically said, all right, enough's enough. Like, we don't want to deal with this crap anymore. You're done. Get out. We'll look after this now. They have now moved that plan ahead. City of Glendale has begun the process of changing the arena from a hockey arena to a facility more attractive to other events, such as concerts and live events, things like the pro rodeos and Cirque du Soleil and some of the performance sort of aspect stuff that they can put on, as opposed to having hockey in the arena. So Gila River Arena is no longer going to be an arena. It's going to be like Gila River, like, concert and stage facility.
Interesting. So they're just getting rid of hockey and keeping the rest.
Correct. So they want nothing to do with the hockey side of it anymore, and I don't blame them in terms of the amount of money that they've probably lost and spent and not been paid by the Coyotes. But the cost to renovate the arena, to move it from a hockey facility into this sort of live event facility, is estimated between $40 and $50 million.
Wow.
That's okay. On top of the $129 million that Glendale still owes from the arena's original development as a hockey arena.
Wow.
So Glendale's just racking up the bills as well now.
Yeah, no kidding. Wow.
The kicker, though, and this is where I was shocked, because, again, we hear all the time, and you're going to laugh, and I know I'm just going to be disgusted by it, but we always hear about the amount of money and the amount of jobs and the amount of all the good that building a brand new arena will do for a city and a town, right? Like, if you build us a new arena, we're going to have all these jobs. We're going to generate all this money. The economy is going to be so great, blah, 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 right? According to the study that was paid for, I guess, by the city of Glendale, hockey generates around $12,000 in tax revenues per game. So that's parking, that's food, that's concessions, it's all that kind of stuff, right? $12,000 in tax revenues per game.
Okay.
Concerts generate around $25,000 in tax revenues.
Wow.
So to offset no hockey at the arena, all Glendale has to do is book 20 nights of live events, and they're basically making money at that point.
That's insane. You would think that they would make more. Wow.
Which is the question of, why are we giving public money to build arenas if there's no tangible benefit anymore? And again, this goes back to all the arguments we've had about using public funds for arenas as well. But this just proves that there is no tangible benefit to giving a hockey team, giving any, maybe it's different for football, maybe it's different for basketball, I don't know. But there is no tangible benefit for giving any money, any public money to a hockey team, if this is the kind of money that they generate versus this is the kind of money that everything else generates.
Yeah, hey, that's crazy.
So Glendale has officially moved forward by hiring a consulting firm to start drawing up plans for this brand new facility, this brand new sort of interior for this facility, because they know that the Coyotes won't be there next year.
Yeah. Wow, I'm just shocked by those numbers, just because, I mean... I know how much I spend when I go watch a game. Never mind when you have that many people. I guess they don't have that many fans in the building during hockey games, but.
And that might be the case. But at the same time, though, when you think about it, takes one concert generates twice as much as two hockey games worth of revenue.
Yeah.
It makes no sense for the Coyotes to even be around Glendale anymore. Like, they should have moved a long time ago if that's the case.
Exactly. I mean, yeah. I mean, it makes sense 100%. I'm just, the numbers are blowing me away, because you wouldn't, like you said, it's two hockey games right there for one night. That's nothing.
No. And that's the thing, is that you look at, I guess, you know, in terms of the cost of putting it on versus the cost of generating income. And it's probably cheaper, again, to put on things like the pro rodeos and, you know, the Cirque du Soleil and stuff, because, again, they're not paying for any of that, you know, making ice and all that kind of stuff, right? Like, that, it makes sense that it's probably making a little bit more money. Would I have thought it would have been double what a hockey game makes? No, never in my life would I have thought it was that different.
Yeah, that's insane.
So
I mean, yeah, it definitely makes sense, but craziness.
I didn't mention this in our sort of pregame kerfuffle that we do. There is another arena that's having a few problems.
Oh.
Savannah, Georgia, where you might know they're getting an ECHL team.
Yes.
I'm not sure. The expansion Savannah ECHL team is looking to basically move into their new arena. So the Savannah Ghost Pirates are supposed to start playing next season, 22-23, in the ECHL. They had a great logo and some fun stuff. But Savannah Ghost Pirates are supposed to have this new arena built. The arena, called the End Market Arena, was originally scheduled to open January 13th and 14th, 2022. It's now been delayed for a month.
Oh.
Because supply chain issues and COVID-19 related delays have sent COVID cases soaring across the United States and is affecting what they can put in and install in the arena because they don't have enough supplies now.
Oh, wow.
There is no firm date for the opening, which means that that month expected date may not even be set in stone yet.
Yeah, hey.
So city officials said they anticipate a delay of just a few weeks. Two events are being postponed from January to February, which were supposed to kick off sort of the big unveiling of the arena.
Yeah. But
yeah, that's not happening now. So.
Oh, this is real probably annoying for them, but.
So just looking at what was supposed to be in there, I'm just pulling up the information here. They're committed to bringing in top concerts like the upcoming Eagles, Bon Jovi, and Keith Urban concerts, which they're supposed to have in there. Obviously, season tickets for the Ghost Pirates are being sold right now as well, as the Savannah Ghost Pirates are getting ready to play next season. But yeah, they're going to take a step back because they don't have an arena to move into because it's missing a bunch of stuff out of it right now.
Yeah. Wow. So just, wow, that kind of sucks, I guess. But...
So, I mean, we talk about how COVID affects the athletes. Like, it's affecting, you know, teams and cities now in terms of having their sort of economies, you know, uprooted a little bit more as well. Because, again, when you think about how, you know, it's a 9,500-seat arena. It's not a huge arena by any means. But if they can't get what they need, I mean, imagine a place like Gila River Arena that needs, like, a complete makeover.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Like, I mean, similar to what you said, you see it affecting the athletes by itself, but that you don't think about the whole community. And yeah, if they're trying to just do some renovations, that's not looking good for them right now at all.
No, I honestly don't know what they're going to do.
Mention, like, the cost of everything's gone up during COVID too. So like their initial estimates are probably going to be a little bit more than...
You know who could help them out, maybe? Calgary. They got a whole bunch of money for an arena.
Yeah.
Probably have a whole bunch of stuff just sitting around now, too, because that arena's not even being built. Like, there's a whole bunch of supplies. Just contact Savannah, if you need help, contact Calgary, Alberta. They know exactly where to get you your gear if you need it.
They could just probably share a rink, maybe.
I mean, why not? I mean, there's only like 9,500 people going to see the Flames right now, so it's okay.
Yeah, exactly. It's perfect.
But I mean, that's the whole thing, is that I look at this now, and I mean, we're talking about costs, and we're talking about, you know, the whole, like, there's a significant effect going on for a few. And you think about Savannah and you go, okay, that's not a huge city. Like, it's not like it's like a New York or, you know, a Los Angeles where they got, you know, somebody else who can just fly in tomorrow and dump money into this project. Savannah, Georgia, it's in, you know, it's not really known for hockey. So somebody's gonna have some deep pockets out there if they're gonna push back the opening, because that's money out of their pocket they can't make at that point.
No kidding, hey? Yeah, but it's definitely, like you said, because it's smaller, that sucks. I mean, I don't feel that bad, because whoever it is, obviously, they've got lots of money, so whatever, but still.
It is what it is, I guess, in terms of having this arena built, so hopefully Savannah will get that open shortly, soon, sometime before the end of 2022, but
yeah,
we'll have to see at this point, so... Let's jump to Iowa, because there's a good story at Iowa, good Canadian story at Iowa as well, as 37-year-old Eric Staal signed a professional tryout contract with the AHL's Iowa Wild. Staal, as you may remember, last played for the Montreal Canadiens, went to the Stanley Cup final, was not re-signed, free agent basically after the season, was sitting at home, and thought, you know what? I want to play for the Olympic team.
Wow.
Decided he was going to go and sign this tryout, this pro tryout with the Wild, because he lives in Minnesota. Him and his family live in Minnesota. Signs the pro tryout with the Wild. He still has a good relationship with the Minnesota Wild. Signs this pro tryout with the Iowa Wild for the sole purpose of getting into shape for the Canadian Olympic team.
I love that, to be honest with you. I mean, he's a little bit older than I know we see in professional hockey quite often.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, good for him for just saying screw it and going for it, because you don't hear that happening too often, especially once you're kind of already done with the pro hockey scene.
Well, I mean, there isn't a lot left that Eric Staal has to do in his career either. Like, it's not like the guy hasn't been there before, and I hate to say that, but he has been there before. He's a member of the Triple Gold Club. He won the 2006 Stanley Cup, obviously, with the Hurricanes. He's a 2007 IIHF World Hockey Championship, but he added the 2010 Olympic gold medal in Vancouver when he was part of that team. So he's been there before. He knows what it takes to win. He knows what, you know, he's got the experience, I think, that Claude Julien wants to take over to the Olympics, especially as maybe a captain or at least an alternate captain for that team. I mean, the guy has been around. He's played over 1,000 NHL games. He was the 89th player to surpass 1,000 points in the NHL. Like, guy's done everything he can possibly do, right? So yeah. What does he need to go back to the Olympics for? Because he wants to. Like, that's the coolest part. I want to go and play in the Olympics one last time.
Yeah.
So full credit to him. But you think, okay, he's 37. He hasn't played a lick of hockey this year, maybe outside of a few beer league games with his buddies. How good is he? Like, is he going to be any good? Is he going to be even worth it? Like, is this going to be? So he came in. He came in on Friday night against Chicago Wolves. Chicago Wolves are a pretty good team. They're pretty decent. They got a pretty solid team in Chicago. One goal, one assist in a 4-3 victory over Chicago. The assist was on the game-winning goal, and it was a shorthanded goal as well. So he was playing in all situations.
No way.
Yeah. So
my guy, I love that.
Okay, so you think, okay, he hasn't played all season. Like, he hasn't played. He's, you know, fresh legs. You know, he's going to, you know, he's obviously going to, you know, jump in and look like, you know, a 25-year-old as opposed to a 37-year-old. But next night he was scheduled to play against the Wolves again. You think, okay, now the bumps and bruises, the aches and pains, you know, that's when they're going to hit you, right? Like, the next day is when it's the worst, right? I mean, as a former, you know, kick the puck around the ice kind of guy, I know that the next day was always the worst for me as well.
Yeah,
game two on Saturday against the Wolves comes out. It's a decent game. Not the greatest thing, you know, whatever. Scores the game-winning overtime goal against Chicago in a 3-2 overtime win for the Wild.
What? No, okay. Good for him, honestly. I'm still sore from my hockey game on Saturday night. So, and it was beer league.
I'm sore from shoveling snow yesterday, and that was brutal.
Yeah, I feel that. But obviously, guys still got it because two huge games right there.
So, Eric Staal, two goals and an assist in his first two games. Monday, the whole team played poorly. They lost 3-0 to Milwaukee. But Staal, 3 points in three games in his AHL, I don't want to say debut because he's been there before, but in his AHL re-debut. But legitimately, if you're going to send this guy over to Beijing to captain or at least to be a leader on this Canadian team, he looks the part. Yeah. I didn't think he'd have the legs, but he looks the part. That's the thing.
That's crazy. Yeah, he had to have been training this whole time because just to come in and, you know, do that well automatically.
Right, yeah.
Good for him.
We'll see how it goes for him because there are guys, I mean, again, we talk about, you know, good guys, bad guys, these kinds of guys in hockey, and I like this guy, I don't like this guy for whatever reason. Eric Staal's just one of those guys where you just go, he's just a good guy. Like, you can't be angry at him because you just go, like, he's a good dude. He doesn't get in trouble. He doesn't do anything crazy. He just goes out there, scores goals, and goes home.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
So
no drama, no nothing.
Just no, exactly.
Good hockey.
So Eric Staal is making a name for himself in the AHL right now, which is fantastic. I'm hoping that he goes over there and, you know, I don't expect him to lead the tournament in scoring by any means, but if he can help Canada bring home a medal, like, why not? Have a good time with it.
I love that. That's my favorite story of the night.
We got a couple more. Now, I want to bring up a couple things because they're breaking news as well from, I guess it's not breaking anymore. It's Wednesday was the news or whatever, but breaking news in terms of stuff that is going on in Canada West. Because again, everybody's getting ready for Canada West weekend again and have some fun with it. As we know, last week, UBC Mount Royal was postponed. Everybody knows that. Everybody was aware of that. Everybody heard about it in terms of UBC Mount Royal did not play. They're going to reschedule for a few. However, Calgary Dinos were slated to host the UBC Thunderbirds on January 21st, 22nd this weekend. Those games have now been moved a week later.
Oh?
The change comes as a result of COVID-related protocols and travel restrictions impacting the UBC Thunderbirds.
Interesting.
which means that perhaps the problem that we saw with the Cougars have not been, it hasn't been solved yet. Mount Royal didn't get a chance to play them. Calgary doesn't get a chance to play them. So I don't know what the catch is on this, but the men's games will happen though out at UBC. So just the women's games have been canceled for this weekend.
Huh.
I don't know. And again, I don't know why they're being postponed other than sounds like COVID and whatever travel restrictions are going to prevent the team from flying into Calgary. So that's kind of weird, but
yeah. Hey, that's interesting.
UBC hasn't played now. Cause again, they're we're talking about next weekend is basically when the conference bye was supposed to be. And there's going to be games played on that weekend already. So now we know UBC and Calgary will play that weekend. We know that Manitoba's playing next week, and we'll get to that in a second. But we know that Manitoba's playing next week. So UBC has not played a significant game now since the first week of December.
Oh, yikes. That's a long time to not play any games.
We're talking a full, like, 2.5 months. They have not played any significant hockey.
Yeah, that's I don't expect they're a strong team, obviously, but that's going to be tough on them their first game back, especially if a lot of this is to do with COVID and they're all going to be, you know.
Right. Like, that's the thing. You look at that and you go, how many of these players are going to be okay? How many of them are going to have, you know, that sort of withdrawal from COVID in terms of just not having, you know, their legs or their, you know, being fully healthy at that point? So,
yeah,
I don't know. It's going to be a tough weekend maybe for them if they're still going through all that COVID stuff right now. So
yikes. Yeah, that's,
and then there's gonna be a huge crunch for them down the stretch as well, because we're talking about a team now that has to play Calgary, which is fine. They got a couple games in February, and then they're gonna have to play Mount Royal somewhere near the end of the season. Like, that could be, that end of the season could still determine first place, but it could also determine a lot more if that's the case now, depending on how UBC plays in the next coming weeks.
Yeah, exactly. That's, yeah, tough schedule.
So
yeah,
that's, you wonder,
a tough one for,
yeah,
sure.
You wonder how this is going to affect UBC overall when it comes to their final standing, but for sure, you know, in the next couple of weeks, see how they do there. And if this continues on for whatever reason, maybe they have to push it back again. Like, who knows? But you would expect Canada West at some point, if they have the minimum number of players, which we'll talk about in a second as well, they have the minimum number of players, you would expect Canada West to finally go, you know what? Get it done.
Yeah.
Go play.
You would think.
But
if they have, I mean, we've saw a game with the low numbers, so I'm not sure if.
Well, we're going to talk about that momentarily here, yeah.
Yeah, but you would just think, you know, at this point, there's no way that they don't have enough players. Maybe that's just me, but I mean, I know most teams in Canada West roster pretty big teams for a reason.
Well, and UBC does have a significant, like, their roster isn't any bigger than anybody else's. Like, they're not holding like 50 players, but they also don't have like 23 players either. They're like 26, 27 players. Like, if there are that many people, and again, we'll get to the rule in a second, because the rule is where you're going to go, oh, that doesn't sound right. The rule is legitimately going to shock you, because it's not what you think it might be. I was mistaken when I thought it was the minimum from what we saw on Friday, but it's actually less than that. So here's the situation on Friday. As you may have heard, UBC canceled last week. One team that was playing short, though, didn't. And they came out and played a whale of a game on Friday night, as the Regina Cougars traveled to Saskatoon to play Saskatchewan Huskies. Saskatchewan Huskies, full team, full roster, ready to go. Cougars show up. They got 15 players.
15. Yeah, that was
13 skaters and 2 goalies.
Yeah, that's a tough roster to play with.
So they go, all right, let's get her done. Let's have some fun. They dress 3 forward lines, 2 defense pairings, and 2 goalies. They legitimately had just enough to squeeze 3 and 2 out of their skaters. Now, saying that, people are going to go, that's ridiculous. Like, you can't have like a competitive game and play with that few. Actually, you can, because Canada West rule, according to what they have, are 10 players and 2 goalies, which means you only have to dress a minimum of 2 lines.
Yeah. Wow. Could you imagine? Like, I can't even imagine playing with... No.
Like, that's beer league hockey right there.
One second then. So 10 plus 2 goalies.
You have to have 12 players, 10 so dressed. We're
saying that UBC has that many players.
So again, if you have a roster of 25, 26, we're saying that there are 15 to 16 players that are in COVID protocol.
Yeah.
I mean, are you having parties every week to spread? Like, this is like the say, like a chicken. Like, you remember how your parents used to send you like over to people's houses that had chicken pox just to get chicken pox? This is what they're doing with COVID now, apparently out in UBC.
Wow.
Huh. I mean, that's not actually happening, folks. Don't take that seriously.
No, yeah, we're just I'm just confused though, because restrictions with flying right now that
could be. And that's very real if that's the case. I'm not denying that. But again,
yeah, I'm not saying it's not. It just seems like that's a lot of play.
But again, if you don't have 10 and 2 to fly into Calgary, yeah, you should be playing that game if you have 10 and 2. You have the minimum.
Yeah.
I don't care about competitiveness. You have the minimum required to play. You do not get the weekend off. You're going to play.
You would assume so.
I don't assume. I'm telling you, that's what the rule is. So go and play.
Yeah.
So Regina rolls into Saskatoon with 15 players. Okay. And they know they're in for a battle. They know they're going to get probably the game of their life taken to them in terms of Saskatchewan feasting on this, on you know, blood in the water sort of idea. 0-0 after the first. So they survived. They survived the first 20 minutes. Okay. So not bad. 1-1 after the second, as Lauren Folk scored a goal later in the period after Meg Dyer scored for Saskatchewan. So they survived 40 minutes, okay?
Yeah.
And we talk about this all the time, about how, you know, weaker teams want to try and, you know, keep the game as close as possible towards the end so they have a chance of winning. I'm not saying that Regina is weaker by any means, but only having 15 players certainly puts them at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
What happened in the third period was absolutely inexplicable, as Lila Carpenter-Bosch scored a shorthanded goal, Olivia Leggett scored a power play goal, and Jordan Blaze scored her first Canada West goal on an empty net while shorthanded to give Regina the 4-1 win.
4-1. That's, I don't know why that score surprised me, because I was being updated the entire game. But no, that's with the 13 skaters, you said?
Yeah. 13 skaters and 2 goals. No, let me rephrase that, because they had an injury in the second period. They had they finished the game with 12 skaters and 2 goaltenders.
And did they play with 12 or 13 the second day? Not that
they really they got a couple players back the second day when they went home because they had recovered in time. They had 17 the next day to play, but 15 and 2 basically the next day. So they had a couple extra players.
You know what? That's insane.
Yeah.
That's just good on them, because that's hard work.
Now,
you know.
Now again, they got hammered on Saturday. Like they lost 6-0, but they were gassed. Like, you could tell moment that they took warm up, it was like, whatever, we don't even care about this game. Like, we got 2 points this weekend, and it's 2 points that nobody would have expected us to get. Like, we did this weekend. It was awesome.
Oh, 100%. Well, even then, like, thinking about how exhausted you are after a game when you have, like, you know, everyone there. I mean, obviously it's easier to recover, but still, like, that's exhausting enough. Never mind. Yeah, they would be absolutely gassed the next day. Like,
let me say that though, in that I don't care if they lost 1,000-1. I don't care if they lost 1,000,000-1, 1,000,000-0 the next day. They won last weekend because they showed up to play. I don't care if they, again, the 4-1 victory is the cherry on top, but they showed up with 15 players and said, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
And now we have 2 weekends in a row where a team has said, not going to play. We can't play. And granted, I'm not doubting the fact that they have, that there's probably some players on their team that have COVID. But if you can't ice 10 and 2 from a roster that has 25, 26 players on it, your team legitimately needs to be in quarantine for the rest of the season.
Yeah. Like, that's a lot.
So credit to Sarah Hodges, credit to the Regina Cougars, because you don't show up with 15 often in Canada West and pull off a victory like that, especially against a team as good as Saskatchewan.
Exactly. Good on them. Like, that's, my legs hurt for them right now. I'm like thinking about it, but wow.
So
I lied about Eric Staal being my favorite story. This is probably my favorite one, and I knew we were going to talk about it, but I just forgot.
So like, here's the flip side. Do you want to hear what the flip side is now? Because here's the crap part of what went on.
Uh-oh. Okay.
So through everything else that happened this weekend, Calgary, McEwen, and Regina now are all tied at 12 points for their in terms of the standings.
Yeah.
All of them have 12 points. Okay. What happens is that it goes to a tiebreaker if the standings remain the same. Say these three teams end up, again, wins and losses, whatever happens, they all end up tied at the end of the season, whatever amount of points. The rules as Canada West have it written are, for three or more teams that are tied, okay, three or more teams that are tied, the moment that one of those teams can be ranked ahead of the other two teams, it happens. It doesn't matter what the rules state. The moment that one of those teams qualifies ahead of the other two, the tiebreaker is broken at that point, and then those other two teams go to a tiebreaker.
Oh.
Okay? Wait,
what?
For example, if Regina somehow won the three-team tiebreaker, it would then go to a two-team tiebreaker between Calgary and McEwen. Regina would automatically get pushed ahead of them, and then Calgary and McEwen would determine who comes in after them.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter what the rules of state, doesn't matter what your record is, it only matters what the tie-breaking rules state, right?
Interesting.
Here are the rules. If three or more teams are still tied, which they are right now, the highest number of points earned in head-to-head games between the three or more teams determines who gets moved ahead, okay?
Okay.
Here's the problem, though.
I'm so curious.
Calgary and McEwen have played three games against each other.
Yeah.
Regina doesn't get to play three games against either Calgary or McEwen, which means that Calgary, who's 2-1 against McEwen and 1-1 against Regina, automatically wins the tiebreaker. Regina has no say in the matter.
Yeah, hey.
Which means that Calgary would earn the sixth and final playoff spot and bump Regina out of a playoff spot, despite the fact that they show up for games and other teams don't. Like, don't get me wrong. I understand what the rules are written as they are. But the fact that the scheduling quirk this year causes Regina to miss the playoffs?
Yeah, like, I mean, I knew there'd be some bumps because of COVID, and obviously the schedule's never really like this, but...
But you can't eliminate Regina for not having an opportunity to play because they don't get a chance to play the other two. It's not their fault that Calgary and McEwen play three times in the season, whereas they only face those two teams twice.
Exactly.
So the three or more teams, the highest number of points earned in head-to-head games goes to Calgary, which means they win on the first tie-breaking rule and McEwen and Regina are eliminated from the playoffs.
Yeah, I hate that, actually.
Right.
They now,
is it fair? No. That's the rule, though. And that's the problem. Is I look at this and I go, should we really be eliminating Regina if they're willing to come out and take a pounding on a Saturday after pulling off the upset of the year on a Friday? Should we really not give them a chance to try and qualify for the playoffs? Like, I get that you can't have a three-team mini tournament before the playoffs. Like, that would be ridiculous to try and schedule that.
Yeah.
But maybe you should.
Yeah. I lost for words again. Wow.
Again. And the note on the playoffs tie-breaking rule states that, quote, once a team is ranked so that it is no longer tied with any other team at any one of these three steps, that team shall be ranked accordingly in the final standings, which means that because Calgary wins the first tie-breaking rule, they get ranked ahead of everybody else. So this is one of the quirks you're going to have to figure out. And if you're Canada West right now, you're literally praying that one of those three teams pulls ahead of the other two by the final standings. Because if they have to, like, legitimately, Sarah Hodges has every right to appeal this if her team misses the playoffs. Because she didn't even get a say in this. Because they play that extra game, it allows Calgary to have more points against those two teams. Because it's a head-to-head. It's not points, you know, in the standings. It's head-to-head for that first tiebreak.
There's no way that they can go with those rules if that were to happen.
All because Calgary went 2-1 against McEwen this year.
Yeah.
So Calgary kind of holds all the cards right now, because if they can at least keep pace with those teams that are tied with them, they're going to make the playoffs no matter what happens. But
interesting.
There's your scheduling quirks for Canada West this year. So just a reminder, Bison's not playing at home this weekend. Exam schedules due to the faculty strike moved them back a week. So they'll play Trinity Western next weekend. Again, women will play Friday and Saturday. Men will play Saturday and Sunday as Trinity Western sends both their teams out here. We'll have a fun interview next week, actually, with a member of the Trinity Western Spartans as well. So stay tuned for that next weekend. With that, folks, we're going to get out of here for another week. Jenna, always a pleasure. Glad to have you along permanently now, back for good. And we'll keep bringing you on as long as you want to come and do this. So,
heck yes, I will be here all the time.
Right on. There we go. Saying that, folks, we're going to get out of here. Hang tight. Lots to come up next week in terms of that interview with our Trinity Western guest. We'll talk to her and get all the information about what it's like playing for an expansion team next week on the Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM. You're in the wrong place. You're in the wrong place. You're listening to CJUM FM 101.5 in Winnipeg.
Game on!
Game on!